Are we living in the days of Noah that Jesus spoke of in the Gospel of Matthew? What reasons do we have to believe that? Or is this charge nothing more than the fanciful tales of alarmists? There seems to be an abundant evidence, for those who care to see it, that we are indeed living in the days of biblical prophecy fulfilled. My interview with author and host of the Prepper Recon Show, Mark Goodwin, is next here on the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, Dolores said, to talk of other things. Of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
It's called the American Dream because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Matthew 24. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying, and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came, and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be.
Welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Today's guest is one that I've been very anxious to speak with for quite some time. Mark Goodwin is the author of the recently released The Days of Noah, Book 1, Conspiracy, and The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution. In addition, Mark has authored The Economic Collapse Chronicles, a three-book series on the challenges people face during an economic meltdown. And you can find Mark on the internet at www.prepperrecon.com, where you'll find his podcast, show archives, and many other helpful resources. Mark, welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Pastor Mike, thanks so much for having me. It's an honor to be on.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing. And I've got to tell you, Mark, your books are fantastic. My wife, Kathy, has read the first two and can't wait for the third one to come out in the Noah series. And we do have a bookstore at church, and we've been stocking these books. And as fast as they're put on the shelf, they're purchased, and people are reading them, and the comments are pretty much the same from everybody. It's like, I thought these were supposed to be fiction. And I think it's fair to describe them. And this is not original with me, of course, but I heard someone refer to your books in this way. They called it prepper fiction. And of course, I like to add, well, really it's truth disguised within a fictional narrative. Is that a fair assessment?
I think so. And I think that, you know, when we read the headlines, you know, you look at the headlines, you go to Drudge Report or wherever, and you look at all of the things and you say, man, that stuff would make a good fiction story, right?
That's
because
right.
It just doesn't sound real.
That's right.
So it's not much of a stretch to just take the headlines and weave them into a post-apocalyptic story because, I mean, when you look around, it's a pretty dystopian landscape. Yes. that we're existing in right now, isn't it?
It certainly is. Yeah, it certainly is. I think maybe that's your books are a perfect example that we can point to say that's probably where that phrase "truth is stranger than fiction" comes from, because it does a great job of opening people's eyes. So the first question I've got for you, Mark, and one that I think our listeners have too, is how did you get started on these kinds of books? What piqued your interest and desire to write books like this, like the Noah Chronicles?
Well, I guess it probably, if I was going to trace it all the way back, I'd probably have to go all the way back to my childhood years. I grew up in Kentucky. Both of my grandparents had farms. Spent a lot of time in the summers on the farms, and they kind of had this somewhat self-sufficient lifestyle. They both came through the Depression, both sets of my grandparents. My grandmother, she made sorghum molasses, and she had barter networks and everything else back during the Depression. So she's kind of been through all of this stuff, and because they've been through it, they lived a very, very different type of lifestyle. And yes. Then I was in Boy Scouts as a young man, and be prepared was the motto. And of course, then you grow up and you get out, and you kind of do your own thing, and all that stuff sort of falls to the back of your mind. But then when 9/11 came along, all that stuff sort of came back to my mind. And while I didn't really know what a prepper was at that time, I kind of got on the ball and started thinking about, what if this gets worse? And what if this is a complete, really turns into a bad mess? What kind of things do I need to do? So, I sort of got into that stock up mode and get ready and for whatever may come. And then sort of got lulled back to sleep. And then in 2008... I think that scared me more than 9/11, the economic collapse that we had in 2008, because 9/11, while I really didn't understand it as well as I thought I did, because I thought, it was what George Bush told me, they hate me because I'm free. It didn't make a whole lot of sense at the time. And as I continued to educate myself more and more later, it turns out that, while they may be an evil bunch of people, we were certainly poking the beehive a lot. So, there may have been some blowback elements to that as well as them just being plain old mean. But the economic aspect, because I didn't understand it, that really, really worried me and really bothered me. And the more I read about it and understood how close we came to an absolute, complete, total meltdown, the more I wanted to know so I could understand it a little bit better and figure out how to prepare for something like that. And started reading books, and I went and got my degree in accounting, and studied economics quite a bit and in college, and then also on my own, because the stuff they teach you in college is very, very different than what you'll get if you just determine in your mind that you're going to learn about it yourself. So as I started following that, I started understanding that everything that happened in 2008 and everything we've done to fix it has not fixed it, and we've actually exacerbated the problem even further. So whatever mess we could have faced in 2008 had we not been pulled back from the brink of the cliff there, all that energy is now stored up. And the next time we have a crisis, it's going to be that much worse than whatever was going to happen in 2008. And one of the things that I wanted to do was just help people wake up to that. And that's the reason I started the Prepper Recon podcast. And I wanted to help people prepare for it. And shortly after starting the podcast, I was sitting in church one day, and the pastor looks out and I, at the time, I was attending a mega church, so there were like 3,800 people in that sanctuary besides myself. So when he said, "Somebody out there's got a book rolling around in their head and they need to go home and write it," me and my wife, we looked at each other, because I'd mentioned to her that, I'd thought about writing a fiction book. But this was something I was going to do when I was old and gray and had nothing else to do but sit around on the rocking chair and write a book, right? Because I didn't think anything would ever come of it. And And I thought, you know, what if that word was for me? So
right.
I went home that day and I started and I said, you know what? I'm just going to play chicken with God here and I'm going to go ahead and do it and be faithful with it and see what comes of it. And I did. And I'm really, really humbled to hear, you know, you say that you're stocking it in your bookstore and that it's flying off the shelf. That's very, very humbling for me.
Yeah, they're great books. So, you then in 2008, you woke up and you didn't go back to sleep. In effect,
no, haven't been back to sleep since.
Yeah. And the reason I say that is because I remember both in 2001 and in 2008 when these things happened, especially 2001, the church was filled for 2-3 Sundays, and I know that this was a common experience across many churches in America, that the churches were filled for the first few weeks after that. And then slowly it started ebbing again, and people kind of went back to their lives and what I like to describe as going back to sleep. Same thing in 2008. And so that seems to be a common malady that we have in America. But you stayed awake and you decided you were going to do something about it. And so that Sunday, you were encouraged to pursue that idea that God had given you to start writing. Was that the Economic Collapse Chronicles?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And there are three of those. Can you briefly describe those, Mark?
Yeah. The very first one is called American Exit Strategy, and it follows three different plot lines. There's two major ones. One is a couple that's in South Florida when the crisis hits, and it becomes evident that they're not going to be able to stay in a major population center. So they do what they can. They liquidate their real estate, their home, and take what they can out of that. And they go buy a small farm up in the hills of Kentucky to be close to family and do what they can to survive what they see coming. And then the other major plot line in there is a third-party presidential candidate. He had ran as a Republican, couldn't get any traction that way, didn't get the nomination, but decided that he wasn't going to just drop out of the race. And so he gets in there and he fights against the Democrat candidate and the neocon Republican candidate as an independent. And his name is Paul Randall. So, and he's got some very different ideas from what you would get from if you thought Fox News was what a Republican was supposed to be, and you thought that maybe it was something a little bit more like what our founders had in mind of a Republican, like a sort of a Thomas Jefferson type ideas for what a Republican is, And the election is basically he doesn't get it, and he's but it's sort of fishy the way everything goes in the election, and from there you get a lot of political turmoil that's going on in D.C. at the same time that you've got all of this chaos going in the streets, and it basically looks like what we just saw in Greece, where you know there's no money in the ATMs. The grocery shelves are stripped bare, and when people start getting desperate, they do desperate things, and the cities just become absolutely unlivable because there's just not enough resources, and what little resources are there, people are just doing anything that's necessary to get a hold of them, and the more violent they are is tends to be the people that are getting along in the cities, and they're just operating under as predators.
Yeah, which we know is not fiction. That is true to human nature.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, how did you come up with the idea? What was the inspiration then to go from the Economic Collapse Chronicles, these three books, into the Days of Noah series?
Well, I guess a lot of the research that I did for the Economic Collapse Chronicles, it kind of gets you in this rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And you just start getting further and further down in the rabbit hole, and you start finding out more and more stuff that, you wish you didn't know.
And you just need more people to tell about it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and you just you start getting all these questions in your mind, like, you know, 9/11. How did, you know, okay, well, building one, a plane hit it, and that's why it fell down. Okay, building two, a plane hit it, and that's why it fell down. Now, building seven was a 50-something story building, 47, I think maybe 47-story building, you know, built to the same specs that those towers were, and and supposedly some fire fell from one of the twin towers and started an office fire in there, and it pancaked down into its own footprint at free fall speed from basically a fire in the trash can. And so there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't add up. And there was all of this gold being stored in vaults beneath the towers that miraculously made it out. And there's just all of this fishy stuff all the way around that entire story. And while I don't know what the answer is, I do try to get folks thinking in the days of Noah Book One Conspiracy about, you know, what did happen, you know, and I don't want to tell them what happened. I want to get them thinking so they can get in there and start investigating it themselves. And then you've got this entire coalition of architects and engineers, and they're called A&E for 9/11 Truth, and they've got a YouTube channel, and they've made some documentaries and things. But it's just hundreds of architects and engineers that say, no way, steel won't melt at the heat that you get from a jet engine fire, which they say most of it burned off, and they just say that none of that stuff that happened on that day could happen. So, so then we're left wondering why, and if something like that was perpetrated, you know, why was it perpetrated? And then that just really leads you down a big rabbit trail of all these other questions, that I try to bring up in the book. And, rather than give people the answer and tell them what to think, I try to just, you know, whet their curiosity so that they'll get in there and start examining that stuff themselves.
Yes. Yes, plenty of examples, plenty of real life organizations and figures that are introduced in the story and in the plot line. So I want to encourage our listeners to, if you don't have the books already, The Days of Noah, Book One, Conspiracy, and The Days of Noah, Book Two, Persecution, you need to get your hands on those books and read them with an open mind. And I think that you'll be rudely awakened if you're one that's been asleep through these last 15, 20 years or so. So what makes these books so interesting to me and to others, Mark, that I know who have read them, is that the backdrop really does read like the front page off of the local newspapers. And so I'd like to discuss some of those things with you. I know that that you're up on what's going on in these areas. I've listened to many of your podcasts on Prepper Recon, and so I thought maybe we would delve into some of these things to give our listeners some examples of what we're talking about. Real life facts, they can check these for themselves. Information is out there, and I thought we would start with the New Asian Bank. That's we're hearing all of the conversation and discussion surrounding China's effort to raise up this new central bank, which I'll let you tell us what are they attempting to do through this.
Well, without actually knowing exactly what their long-term plans are, I would suspect that it's a move to try to shift power from west to east. And then obviously they've made several comments about the need to de-dollarize the world, and so I think that there's a play to try to do that.
Yeah.
And as they reduce the demand for the dollar is as they start to, and I believe that they'll be very successful in what they're trying to do, to break away from the old Bretton Woods system, which was where the dollar was the reserve currency for the world. And, you know, if China wants to buy oil from Russia, typically they would take their yuan, trade it for dollars, and then buy the oil in dollars, and then Russia would take the dollars and go and convert those back to rubles. So rather than doing that, you know, they're saying, you know, why do we do this? And it's a big question in a lot of countries' minds, and they don't really understand why they're still doing this, because at the time that Bretton Woods was put into place, the dollar was gold-backed.
Yes.
And, of course, now that's not the case at all anymore.
Right. Now, some of our listeners may not be familiar with how all that came around in the first place. I mean, why in the world would OPEC or any of the Middle Eastern oil-producing nations designate that the dollar is what they will accept as currency for oil? How did that happen?
Well, after the default of the Bretton Woods agreement, which Bretton Woods came into being after World War II, and the victor countries sat down and decided that's how it was going to be for the world, we basically would say, you know, for every dollar that you have, you know, we'll, at any time you can cash that in for a dollar's worth of gold. And gold mm-hmm. was set at $35 the ounce. At some point in the late 60s, Charles de Gaulle, who was the president of France, figured out, he did some real short math like we could today, and said, you know what, I think they're abusing this global reserve currency system, and I think that they're printing more dollars than there is gold to back it up.
Mm.
And so he started cashing in all of France's dollars for gold to bring their gold back to France. Well, this caused a run, and it became very, very evident that we weren't going to have the gold to pay that off. So Nixon closed the gold window, and we basically defaulted. And that's when we started to see the hyperinflation of the 70s. So mm-hmm. Henry Kissinger, who belongs to a lot of sort of nefarious groups like the Bilderberg Group, Trilateral Commission, and
yes.
Council on Foreign Relations – arranged a deal with the Saudis for what was essentially an oil-backed dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Through that, we promised the Saudis military backing, even though if you're a Christian in Saudi Arabia, you've got a really good chance of losing your head or being mm-hmm. in prison for the rest of your life. If you're a woman in Saudi Arabia, you're not allowed to drive a car or do a lot of the other things that we would like to think women should be able to do. They're very, very oppressed there. Christians are very, very oppressed in that country. Yet we prop them up militarily, and they're a friend while we get a lot of other people around the world that if they behaved like that, they would quickly be labeled as dictators. So it has a lot to do with, you know, what our interest is as to what type of label you're going to get.
Yes.
From our administration. But anyway, the deal was for Saudi to, you know, convince OPEC to change to trade oil for dollars. And that's been going on for ever since the 70s, since Kissinger set that deal up, which we often will call the petrodollar. And
yes.
And that's starting to fall by the wayside. And if it actually goes away, I suppose that we'll just have a lead-backed dollar, because we do still have
right.
we do still have a lot of big guns. So
yes, that's,
you
that's
know, for exact, smaller countries, yeah. we can sort of intimidate them into just going along with our dictated policies.
Yeah, and I think some would even go so far as to say, Mark, that the United States has already weaponized the dollar. As you well know, a lot of the dictators and leaders of other nations that have lost power and even lost their lives in the last decade, the United States was heavily involved in bringing that to pass. So back to the Asian Bank, this creates an interesting dilemma for China, because they hold a tremendous amount of U.S. debt, don't they?
Well, about $1 trillion, a little more. And that would be a terrible thing for them to lose. And I don't think it's something they want to see gradually happen. I mean, something they want to see happen overnight. I think it's something they would like to gradually do. But I think that if push comes to shove, I don't think that they would have any problem weaponizing the dollar in their favor by dumping that $1 trillion worth of currency. And if they see that there's a run and other holders of U.S. debt are also dumping their currency, I think that they'll want to try to be the first to the draw. And everybody wants to hit the exit when somebody yells fire in the theater. So. I don't think they'd be any different in that situation. And I think that they're just trying to set up, and I think they see the inevitable much more so than the American public.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they're trying to get out of dollars as quietly and as calmly as they possibly can without yelling fire.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you mentioned a run on the banks. Let's talk about Greece and the situation that's going on over there. How does this present a picture of the current economic problems that are just below the surface here in America?
It's pretty much exactly the same thing. Greece probably doesn't have – they probably don't have a $1 trillion military budget. But
yes.
But, as far as the welfare state, they've done exactly the same things we're doing. The trouble we're having in Puerto Rico right now is based on pensions, which is exactly like the issue they're having in Greece. And they want to keep borrowing money and they don't want to pay it back. And they don't see why they should have to pay it back. They don't understand why they should have to take a haircut on benefits like pensions and things like that. It just doesn't make sense to them, because their socialist, communist government have been telling the people for years that this is the way this works. You just keep borrowing and you never pay it back, and that's okay. And the alarm bells have been sounding for years and years and years. Well, someday you're going to hit the edge of the cliff and you're going to go over, and everything goes bad when there's no currency, there's no groceries on the shelves, and there's no police, and there's no services, and there's nothing else except chaos and misery. And they just didn't want to hear it. Well, and I'm very, very surprised that it took this long for the things to deteriorate to the point they are in Greece. But it was a mathematical certainty that was what was going to happen. And I'm very, very surprised that it hasn't hit our shores yet. But it's also, just like Greece, a mathematical certainty that we're going to experience the same thing that they're experiencing. And we can hold it off a little bit longer because of the military and our ability to push our weight around through hegemony, through dictating to other countries that they're going to continue to take the dollar so that we can continue to print it. Greece, they're on the euro, so they can't devalue their currency to pay their debts off by debasing their own money like we can. But at some point that jig's going to be up as well. And we're going to have to go through exactly what they're going through.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little later in the show we'll discuss some of the things that folks can be doing right now to prepare for that inevitable situation, because I agree with you wholeheartedly, Mark. We may be able to postpone it a little while, but it's going to hit the shores here pretty soon. So that raises the issue of a so-called global financial reset. Are you hearing any rumblings about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And And I think especially concerning this fall, we've got a lot of folks from the prophetic sector that yes. are really concerned about the September or Jonathan Cahn, which, yeah. you know, he's not setting any dates. He's not telling us what he thinks is going to happen this September. He's just saying every 7 years, according to the Bible and there's a year of debt forgiveness, and it's called the Shemitah. And for a godly nation, that can be a blessing. And for an ungodly nation, it can be a curse. And, you know, up until recently, America had the highest Jewish population on the earth. And so, you know, a lot of things just sort of holds true for America that held true for Israel without getting into, I don't necessarily subscribe to replacement theology, but there's just some general principles. And he points out that, you know, every 7 years we have a Shemitah. And 7 years ago on the Shemitah, the stock market dropped 7%. We lost 777 points, and that was in 2008, September of 2008, and that marked the beginning of the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
7 years prior to that, on the Shemitah, was 9/11. And, of course, when the stock market reopened after 9/11, we lost 7% of the market in a single day. And of course, there was the, you know, our nation has never been the same since that, you know, right. we can't even get into what we lost, monetarily
right.
from 9/11, compared to what we've lost in the way of freedom from the abuse of the surveillance state and what we have to go through being treated like criminals in our own country every time we get on a plane, and all of our emails and phone calls and Skype recordings like we're talking on right now are being filtered through the NSA, and we're all criminals until proven innocent. So right. what we've lost in the wake of 9/11 is just it just doesn't even compare to the freedom to what we've lost in the way of our way of life and freedom compared to the money. It's much bigger.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's been described, the United States, not just the economic system that we're under or operating today, but also the way that the society relates, citizens relates to its government. I've read it described as sort of a welfare-warfare relationship, a welfare-warfare economy. And what I mean by that is it is the intention of this government. And I don't mean this current administration. This I'm talking about the U.S. government that's been going on for many, many decades. But it is their intention to keep a critical mass of citizens distracted, so to speak, and concerned about what I would describe as frivolous things, many of them on government assistance, and I'm not belittling those who are on government assistance out of necessity, but I am challenging those who are on government assistance because they're too lazy to work. And so these citizens will give a rubber stamp approval to any kind of behavior that our government decides they want to engage in, as long as the checks keep coming every month. And lately, the last couple of years, our government has been very active in pulling down other governments around the world. Now, this may come as a surprise to some of our listeners, Mark, but the so-called Arab Spring and some of these other so-called populist revolts and rebellions, every one of them were staged. And it's my personal belief that every one of them were funded by the United States government through back channels and the CIA. I'm not asking you to comment on that, but I bring that up to say that we have a lot of critical issues facing our nation today, but none are more dangerous than what you were talking about just a moment ago, the loss of privacy, the loss of liberty, and the loss of our freedom. We are living in a surveillance state today.
Yeah, and to just briefly comment on that, Saddam and Gaddafi both wanted to start trading oil and gold.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it was just coincidental or not, they're both dead. And on a side note, the CEO of Total, which is France's largest oil company, he also questioned why we were trading oil in dollars. And about a year after he made that comment, he had a very, very unfortunate plane accident, hit a snowplow in Russia, you know, because there's a lot of times they've got snowplows just sitting around on the runway when you taxi in, and you know, it's just unfortunate. But yes,
just for our listeners, I'm talking with Mark Goodwin from Prepper Recon, and we're hitting a lot of different touch points in this conversation, and I just want to encourage our listeners, go check this stuff out for yourself. It's the same thing I tell folks. Many of my listeners already know I'm a pastor, and some of these things I talk about from the pulpit on a somewhat regular basis, and I challenge people, listen, you don't have to believe a word that I say, because the evidence is out there. Go check it out. You can fact check everything I say. Go check the evidence, and what you'll find out is I'm right. So moving on then, how about the real estate market? The news is that it's recovering, that housing prices are starting to improve, things are looking pretty rosy. But those in the know, those that have, that follow all the trends and the indicators, they're saying something completely different, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I want to make sure that I answered your last question too, because I kind of shot off on a rabbit trail there and didn't get to comment on the welfare and warfare economy. But you know, we're watching that right now. Greece's welfare system, it's going to take a haircut despite their vote against austerity, because there's no more money. And so are ours. Our foreign policy is going to change, regardless of who we put in office. You know, whether we get another, even if we get another Bush in there, who would love to keep the warfare machine going, and all of his backers, and everybody over on K Street that's helping to fund the Bush campaign this time. They would love to keep that going, but it's going to change because the money's going to run out, and the welfare system, it's going to change because the money's going to run out. And I don't want to, I always want to make sure that I'm differentiating between the people that this absolutely can't, that absolutely will not work, and they won't contribute, and they milk the system. And I want to make sure I differentiate between those people and the folks that are on Social Security, which wasn't the greatest idea. But you know what? They paid into that system their entire life.
That's right.
And so if that's you, if you're on Social Security and you're getting a check, I'm not talking about you, because you earned that. You paid that money in. The same thing for the men and women that have served in our armed forces, and you're retired from the armed forces, or you were disabled in battle and you're getting a check. You earned that. And we're very grateful for your service.
We're in agreement.
And we're not talking about you. But we've just got this huge class of people that just milk the system, and they're gonna jeopardize it for all of the other folks that we just talked about, the folks that paid into the system, and the folks that serve their countries. And there's not going to be money there for them either, because of these people that are milking it, and because of the $1 trillion worth of money that we're spending on military budget every year. A large part of that is on the budget. I think about $600 billion on the budget, but then you've got about another $400 billion that's a black box spending that nobody knows where it goes. It just kind of it just kind of like poof, disappears.
Yeah.
And while the Federal Reserve can continue to print that money out of nowhere, the value has to come from somewhere.
Right.
That $1 trillion, that it has to be exchanged for some value to purchase those goods and services that we're consuming in the military. So it doesn't just come from the magic unicorn. The money, the nominal value may, but the nominal dollar amount may, but the value has to be extracted from somewhere. And
it's
a nightmare, and it's beyond fixing. And the only thing we can do at this point is brace for impact. And that doesn't mean you give up in the election process. I'd rather have somebody like Rand Paul at the helm when we go over the cliff than a Bush or a Clinton or a Sanders.
Right.
Somebody like Bernie Sanders would seize the opportunity of eclipse and take us straight into a Mao or Stalin type communism, complete with death camps for Christians and dissenters, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely right. Yep. I agree. So, real estate bubble is about to burst again. Yeah, timeline?
I don't know what the timeline is. My crystal ball is in the shop, Freddie and Fannie, they never stopped with the 3% down loans, So and the government's got about as much business being in real estate as they have in education or healthcare or welfare or marriage or any of the other institutions they've destroyed.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that we'll probably see another one. I talked to Fabian Calvo, which is kind of a big real estate guru, and he thinks that the bubble's got a little bit further to go. But then again, getting back to that, the Shemitah and then a lot of secular economists that see something really bad coming this fall, like Martin Armstrong, who's successfully called a few things. And he thinks around October we'll get a big bond bubble, and if we get a collapse in the bonds, that means rates are going to go up, and if rates go up, then all of these people that their job is working at Walmart or Starbucks or McDonald's because that's the best they could get with a master's degree from Columbia, they're not going to be able to afford the higher rates.
Yeah.
And that's going to bring the housing prices back down again.
Yeah. Well, and the United States government is not helping itself. It's not being consistent on economic policy. And it absolutely does not have the best interests of American citizens at heart. One example of that, the most recent example of that, is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That is going to devastate the U.S. job market. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, from what I know, it's going to just give more power to the corporations. But then again, nobody really knows. It's kind of like Obamacare. We don't really know what's in it. And Paul Ryan is parroting Nancy Pelosi now, and he's saying, we're going to have to pass the bill to see what's in it. And we expect that out of the left. But when it comes to somebody like Ryan that betrays the people who elected him, he should be charged with treason. Instead, any legislator who discloses the contents of TPP is at risk of being charged with leaking confidential information.
Wow. How did we ever get to this point where that is the case? One of the telltale signs of a disintegrating society, Mark, is the moral rot that it'll tolerate. And I'm not going to take us off into the recent Supreme Court decision regarding same-sex marriage. We'll save that for another show. But America has certainly fallen on hard times, and it appears now that America is more the land of the deceived and the asleep than it is the land of the free and the brave. One of the things I'd like to touch on is the idea that socialism has gained a very strong foothold and is actually the ideological force that's driving much of what we see in politics today. It's been described, Fabian socialism specifically, has been described as a socialist ideology that prefers to move the herd very slowly in order to accomplish its objectives. What can you tell us about some of these things that are going on in our culture and why we've arrived at those today?
Well, that strategy of moving us a little bit at a time, I think that it's a proven method, isn't it? I mean, all the atrocities that have been rolled out at once on the Jews in Nazi Germany, they'd have revolted, but through slow, systematic conditioning, they didn't even put up a fight. So I think that that's exactly what's being done to us in the way of introducing socialism into our culture. And that's something that you can blame both parties for. FDR was made huge advances into bringing us into a socialist country. We just mentioned Social Security, which is a very, we didn't put grandma out on the porch when she turned 70 and let the wolves eat her, before Social Security. You had family, you had savings, you prepared for that your whole life, and you had community. And when people, if somebody had a disabled child and they weren't able to care for the child and work, and the child was never able to have gainful employment or whatever, the church took care of them. But we weeded out the people that would milk the system because, my church, my old church that I left in Fort Lauderdale when we moved recently, they had a huge ministry for the misfortunate. And if you would go in there and ask for a handout, they'd sit you down. How did you get in this situation? Why are you in this situation? What do you need? And, what can we do to get you out of it? But that's not what socialism does. Socialism says, what can we do to trap you in it?
Yes.
And how can we make you comfortable in your poverty so you'll always vote for us?
That's right.
So and it's just been, it's like you said, it's been a long, slow process. Bush even voted for the Medicare Part D, which just made a bigger put the government in charge of more things that we should be responsible for ourselves. And which is a big part of why the medical industry was so messed up in the first place and got us to the point of accepting something as atrocious as Obamacare, which the Affordable Care Act, our premiums went up 400%.
Wow, 400%. One of the things that I like to tell folks is, listen, there essentially is no difference between the R's and the D's except the speed at which they're trying to enslave you. The Democrats are perfectly fine with doing it pretty rapid succession. The Republicans want to take a little longer to do it, but they're both after the same objective. Here's an example that comes to mind when we're talking about this whole social ideology taking hold in America and moving to a place and recreating our culture into something we never could have imagined. Now, others have pictured it. George Orwell comes to mind right off the bat. But thinking about our domestic police force, local police forces, they much more closely resemble SWAT teams. Light armor, mechanized attack forces now than they do the friendly neighborhood patrolmen that we knew growing up. The Justice Department is bent on taking over the larger municipal police departments and recreating them into something that they should never be. Do you have any comment on that, Mark?
Well, in markets like L.A., it might be warranted, but when you see it in Mayberry, it's conditioning, pure and simple, and it's just getting us ready to deal with an increasingly more oppressive state, you know, because we've been seeing that ever since 9/11, and it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. And I don't expect that to let up at all. And Washington bribes the local police departments with trinkets to their 1033 program, where they give up armored vehicles to small police departments and municipalities. And it makes me wonder what they're getting ready for. And I just, it worries me. It's another one of those things that you just wish you didn't know about.
Right, right. That I guess maybe a good tangent on this is Jade Helm. What's your take on that?
Well, I hope it's conditioning, but it's very, very curious that it wraps up on September 15th, which is 2 days after Shemitah. So I wonder if there's some folks at the Pentagon that have been watching some Jonathan Cahn videos.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
Because you see when you look at the pictures, if you've watched any alternative news, because you didn't see it on Fox or CNN, the lines in Greece, but the folks are very, very civilized there, and even in their protesting, they're very civilized. When you come to America and you see our protests, when you see what happened in Ferguson, and you see what happened in Baltimore. Our empty ATM lines are not going to look like their empty ATM lines. And our hoarding at the grocery store is not going to look like it looks in Greece. It's going to be much, much more violent.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, on another area, our judicial system continues to create law out of thin air, which clearly is not their role. Why do you think the legislature doesn't step up and rebuke that kind of mismanagement, misinterpretation of the Constitution, Mark?
I don't know. I suspect that there's probably a lot of, you know, I think that it's abused, the system's abused from both sides of the aisle, and it's one of those things that, you know, the same way that you don't see too much attacking from the right for things about the left and vice versa, sort of a you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours kind of a thing. I suppose there's a lot of that to where they're both abusing that system, and so they just had to go along with the status quo. But you know, but then there's some other folks that should be speaking out that you would expect to be speaking out more that don't. And for them, I don't know. I maybe the CIA has a dossier on them, and there's information in those dossiers that could be used to quiet them down if they start speaking out too much. And of course, the CIA, you know, I mean, if they need to, they can always put a little child porn on your computer and character assassination. So I don't know. I wonder if there's some degree of intimidation that people were told that this is just the way it is now.
Yeah, it's a real head scratcher for me too, and I've come to sort of the same conclusion that they've got something on somebody. It's either blackmail or bribery, because the things that they're remaining quiet about just defy logic and reason. Another area that is becoming more focused and is drawing a little more attention, at least in the sources that I read and go to for information, is the attack on homeschool families. Examples are all over the place if you know where to look, of the government, the U.S. government forcing homeschool families to comply with regulations. Common Core, for example, is the latest that they're trying to infiltrate homeschool families. Have you read much on this, Mark?
Yeah, I have, and that's actually part of the days of Noah in conspiracy. You know, they're homeschooling their child, and she's taken away from them, and of course, when they come in to take her away, they shoot the dog, because that's typically what law enforcement's instructed to do. Anytime they come into a home that has a barking dog, even if it's non-threatening, they just the protocol is to shoot it for many, many departments rather than to ask the homeowner to put it in a bathroom or another room or something to where it wouldn't be a threat to the officer. They just shoot it, which a lot of folks look at their pet like a family member, but getting off on a rabbit trail. But yeah, and homeschooling, they can't have it because the public education system is the most fundamental level of state indoctrination, and it's got to be preserved at all costs. You know, if you've got 1% of the population homeschooling, that's okay because you've still got basically this sort of herd mentality, this herd immunity from anybody ever getting any type of ability to think for themselves. But if children can't be brainwashed through the education system, then the state's just going to have to roll out outright re-education camps to maintain the status quo. You know, and that's where they do their indoctrination, and they teach your children that, you know, that's where we teach our children to be atheist, because yeah. We tell them that you came from an ape, you know, which says there's no God. Everything that your Sunday school teacher tells you is a lie, and mm-hmm. He's got you for 30 minutes a week, and I've got you for 6 hours a day. So right. who do you think that child's going to believe?
Yeah, that's right. Well, and I've made it a point on occasion when the text justifies it to point out many of the inconsistencies in evolutionary theory and how it conflicts with God's word and people as image bearers. But as you know, evolution teaches survival of the fittest, and that evolutionary theory teaches that species should be doing everything within their power to make sure they advance their genetic code to the next generation. And if that applies to human beings, then the question I like to ask people is, how can you speak out against bullying or any of these other issues that we face as a culture if we're teaching our children that they're just a matter of space, time, and chance, and there's nothing significant about their lives, and that they should be doing everything they can to make sure they have all that they need. Seems to me contradictory in the least. All of this seems to be, to some, a bit of doom and gloom. So let's switch and remind our listeners that those that know Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord, that He has overcome all of this, all of these things that we've talked about on this show, Mark, that Christ has already overcome, and because of that, we are overcomers as well. So I want to remind our listeners of that fact. Our hope is not in the government. It's not in a political party. It's not in a nation. It's not in our bank accounts. It's not in any of these things that we've talked about, but our hope is in Jesus Christ. So on more of a practical level, what can people do to prepare for some of these situations that we've been talking about? What can they do personally to get ready for some of these things?
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head for your number one step, and that's going to be to have your hope in Christ and to be spiritually prepared for the dark days that are coming. And last week I was reading 2 Peter and chapter 2, and in verse 5 it starts, it says, "If he did not spare the ancient world when he brought the flood on its ungodly people, but protected Noah, a preacher of righteousness, and seven others, if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah by burning them to ashes and made them an example of what is going to happen to the ungodly, and if he rescued Lot, a righteous man who was distressed by the filthy lives of lawless men, for that righteous man living among them day after day was tormented in his righteous soul by the lawless deeds he saw and heard. If this is so, then the Lord knows how to rescue godly men from trials and to hold the unrighteous for the day of judgment." So we know that whatever's coming on this country, God's able to separate the wheat from the chaff, and we saw that in Egypt and Goshen, you know.
Yes.
But now in this just really struck me last week when I read this in 2 Peter. But you know, God saved Noah, and he saved Lot.
Yes.
But let me tell you what, that is two very, very different survival stories right there.
Yes, that's right.
Noah had you know, he was told by God what was going to happen, and he spent 120 years preparing for that. He built the ark, yes. Did what he could. He got his provisions together. It was more than he could do. There was no way in the world he was going to be able to run around and get two of every animal. But he did his best, and then God did the rest. He brought all the critters together for the
yes.
ark. And then when the ark rested, Noah had a place to stay. He had shelter in that ark. He had food. He had the animals reproducing. And if he had two rabbits in there, and a couple of chickens, then, you know, he had protein. He had rabbit meat, and he had eggs and milk from the cows. I'm sure he had two bees, so he had honey. He had a lot of great stuff going on in there. And he was very, very well prepared, and when the flood waters subsided, he was pretty well set. Lot, yes. on the other hand, he lived in Sodom and Gomorrah. There's a point, if you read in Genesis, where Abraham has to go in and rescue Lot because Sodom and Gomorrah has been overtaken by a ruthless gang of marauders. And after that, Lot goes back and lives in that city. And I wonder if that was a wake up call to tell Lot, you know what? This isn't the best place. This isn't my highest and best will for you to be in this city. And you really need to think about relocating maybe to a little bit more rural population. But what yeah. happens is that he's still in that city when the angels come to bring the fire and brimstone, and he's rushed out in the middle of the night. We don't even know that he has a go bag. His wife doesn't make it, you know, whether she's just so enthralled with the culture and the, you know, the shopping and whatever it is in the city, and she just has to be there. You know, she just can't leave it, and she's got to turn around for one more look, which costs her life. His daughters, you know, I guess they were in the public education system, because they've got a very, very, if you read the rest of the story, they've got a very, very distorted view of what sexuality should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah.
so he didn't, you know, I don't know, you know, he didn't want to take the girls out of school. The wife doesn't want to leave, or friends and all of this. I don't know what the reason was that he stayed, but it yeah. just about cost him everything. And yes, yeah. God rescued him, but it was by the skin of his teeth. And it's a very, very different survival story than Noah's. And unfortunately, we hear so many Lots in the church today that, yes, yeah. I know what's coming to this nation, but God's going to take care of us. We're going to yeah. pray, you know. What are you mm-hmm. going to pray for? You're going to pray for somebody that's prepared. That's what you're going to pray for.
Yes, that's
and,
right.
And there's a few practical things people can do beyond praying. I think that prayer is, you know, that's that spiritual preparedness, and that's being spiritually prepared, and that has to do with who you are. Another thing that has to do with who you are is being physically prepared. We saw a lot of people this past winter that just keeled over from heart attacks because they were up on their roof trying to shovel the snow off before it collapsed their roof up in the Northeast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them didn't make it because they keeled over from heart attacks. So they weren't in physical condition to be able to handle a disaster. And then the next level after that is being financially prepared. You know, if you're in debt up to your eyeballs and you're spending more than you make, and we have an economic crisis, you're not going to make it. People that were in debt up to their eyeballs in 2008, they lost their home. A lot of them lost their job. They had no cushion, and, you know, and they're still fighting and struggling. A lot of them still.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's definitely the next place you want to start, is making sure that you're on a sustainable budget yourself. And then from there, we can just look at the Greeks. You know, what are they trying to do right now? Well, they're trying to get money and they're trying to get food. So, you know, if you're trusting the bank to hold all of your money, that might not be the best idea. You might want to keep a little cash around the house. In a safe place where it's not going to get stolen, and stock up a little bit of food. You know, we recommend starting with a month and then trying to build from there. And a real easy, cheap way to build up a month's worth of food is to just take a 50-gallon bucket, and you can either take Mylar bags or you can take a food saver if you already have one of those, and you can put a 20-pound bag of rice in there. I just saw it at Walmart for about $8.50. And then you can throw a few bags of dried beans in there, and they're about $1, $1.50 a pound, whether you go to Walmart or what your local grocery store is. And you can put 10 pounds of beans in there. And for about $20, you can fill up one of these buckets and just cap it off. And you've got 20 days worth of food in one of those buckets for one person, or 10 days for two people. And that's a real quick way to just jumpstart your food program, your food storage program. And then from there, just buy the stuff that you buy already that stores well. If you like spaghetti and pasta, get that and try to shop the deals, you know, go to the store when it's buy one, get one free. And, most stores will let you use a store coupon and a manufacturer coupon on the item that you're paying for. And a lot of them will let you use the store coupon and the manufacturer coupon on the free item. So if you've got a can of spaghetti sauce and it's $4, you're getting one, buy one, you're going to buy one, get one free. So now it's down to two. And if you've got a dollar coupon from the store and a dollar manufacturer coupon and on both of them, now you're getting both jars free.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff. This doesn't have to be expensive. And then from there, you want to make sure that you're going to be able to take care of security. I've had a couple of police officers from the Southern California area on the show recently, and both of them say, you know, when things get bad, they're not going to be able to take care of everything. It's not that they don't want to. It's not that they don't feel the duty to, but they're absolutely overrun. And we've seen that in Ferguson, where the police just had to stand down. There was nothing they could do, and they just burnt that city to the ground. And we saw it in Baltimore, where the mayor told them to give them room to destroy and stand down. So whether they're being told to stand down or whether it's just because they don't have the capacity to deal with the situation, in a grid down situation without rule of law, you're going to be handling security yourself. And if you're the softest marshmallow on the street, guess where they're coming first? You know, so that's not who you want to be. And, Paul tells us that, you know, he who doesn't take care of his own, who doesn't provide for the needs of his own family is worse than an infidel or an unbeliever. Well, that's not just food in the fridge and a roof over your head. You know, that's everything that your family needs to sustain life. And sometimes that means security.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So I imagine that some of our listeners, Mark, were frantically trying to scribble these things down, all of these tips and guidelines and things that they can do. Is there some place that they can go at Prepper Recon and get this in pamphlet, booklet, or book form?
We cover all of this stuff regularly on Prepper Recon through the posts and through the podcast. I'm going to tell you, the fiction books, I try to sneak enough of that stuff in there, not enough to where it's just a survival manual, but I try to give you a lot of thoughts and tips and tricks and things in the fiction books, both in the Economic Collapse Chronicles and in the Days of Noah, where you're seeing the characters in these different situations where they're having to survive. And it forces you to think, if I was in this situation where Noah's at right now, would I be able to get through it? Do I have the resources that I need to survive that type of situation that he's in right now? And, what if we had that type of economic collapse? What are my resources? How could I manage them? But then also I have written a couple of nonfiction books, and both of those I've co-authored with David Kobler, who also has the Southern Prepper One YouTube channel, and he does a lot of good survival tips on there as well. And he was one of the advisors for Doomsday Preppers for the first two seasons. And he's a veteran from Iraq, so he's seen some tough times for sure. And our first book was called Retreat Security and Small Unit Tactics, which is very, very good for, you know, if you want to put together a neighborhood watch for really tough times, or just some things that you can think about to harden your home and be ready to take care of security yourself if you need to. And then the next one is called the 7-Step Survival Plan. And we wrote that specifically for the people that you just mentioned, the people that are just overwhelmed. They've said, you know what? I don't want to be a lot. I know God's going to take care of me. I know he's going to see me through it, but I don't really necessarily want to go up to the mountain with, you know, my spouse is dead. I've got, now I'm a single parent. I've got two children that have coming out of the public school systems that know absolutely nothing and are going to make some really bad decisions. And I just don't know what I'm going to do. And they don't want to be in that position, even though God will rescue them. I'd rather be a Noah. I'd rather have the shelter. I'd rather have the food, and I'd rather be ready. And it's called the 7-Step Survival Plan. And it's meant to make it not so overwhelming, to give you a starting point to break it all down into easy to do steps and to prioritize them so that you don't get ahead of yourself. And because a lot of times the first thing people want to do when they hear about an economic collapse, okay, well, I'm going to take all my money and I'm going to buy gold and silver. All right. Yeah. Well, you know what? That's a great part of the plan. But if you don't have any storable food, if you don't have any cash, what are you going to do? When there's nobody else has any cash, because you can't eat your goat and you can't eat your silver. Gold and silver, Genesis 13:2 says that Abraham was wealthy in cattle and gold and silver. So it's always been a store of value, and it's great for that. And if you've got a lot of wealth, I think it's a great way to preserve part of your wealth to what's going to be on the other side. But you got to get there first, and you're going to need those practical things, you know, food and shelter and security and water and medical, you know, medical stuff, because when the cops aren't on the street anymore, you know, the doctor doesn't go to work anymore either, because he's going to stay home and he's going to have to take care of his own family.
Yeah.
So you want to have some basic first aid kit, which we also sell at PrepperRecon.com. We've got a nice individual first aid kit, and it's got some advanced trauma equipment in it for, you know, deep lacerations or, God forbid, gunshot wounds or anything like that. So,
yeah. Yeah. We've been talking with author Mark Goodwin, host of Prepper Recon podcast. Check out the website, PrepperRecon.com. I'm on the website right now looking at it. Click the store tab to check out some of these items that Mark's been talking about. There's a lot of good resources under the links tab as well. And if you have questions for Mark, I'm sure he'd be happy to answer those. So touch base with him on the contact form. Where else can they find you on social media, Mark? Are you on Twitter or Facebook or any of those things?
We don't do Facebook anymore because they shut it down to where if they tell me I'm not a person. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe they're right. But I feel like a person. But you never know. Maybe they're right. That guy's got more money than I do. So you got to listen to him. But we are on Twitter, and we tweet, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. And I'm also on YouTube. We syndicate all of the podcasts, also go to YouTube, and we're going to be having some exclusive content that's going to be just for YouTube subscribers. So go over to the Prepper Recon YouTube channel and subscribe there, and you'll make sure to get email alerts when any new content comes up.
Okay. iTunes is the podcast
Prepper
there?
Recon, yeah, Prepper okay. Recon's also on iTunes. It's on Stitcher, all those podcatchers.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, Mark, I think we've probably got a part two to this conversation, and we can maybe focus in on a couple of these things in a little more detail. You up for that?
Pastor Mike, I'd love to do it.
That would be awesome. Well, I appreciate you being on the show, Mark, and we'll set up a time and get a part two figured out.
All right. Thanks so much. God bless.
God bless you. Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook, because I guess we are a person, and Twitter, and listen directly from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.micah68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of the Soaring Eagle Radio Program.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio Program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek him.